We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Wind across the Midwest. Temperatures will be below average today and tomorrow. By midweek, however, a warming trend will return, boosting temperatures into the 70s Thursday and Friday. High temperatures today will range from the low 50s across eastern Indiana to the mid-60s across central Missouri. Low temperatures overnight tonight will range from the upper 30s across northern Iowa and southern Wisconsin to near 50 degrees across much of Indiana and western Kentucky. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy with scattered sprinkles, a high of 50. The wind out of the northeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 45 and a north wind around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, the high 65. The wind from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low around 50. The outlook for Thursday, partly sunny with a high of 72 and a light southeast wind. Thursday night and Friday, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-50s and a high Friday in the mid-70s. Friday night, mostly cloudy, the low in the upper 50s, and the outlook for Saturday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high in the upper 70s. At noon central time, temperatures were in the upper 40s to the low 60s. In Rockford, it was 63 degrees. O'Hare checked in with 58. At Bloomington, 59. Carbondale, 61. At South Bend, 56. Lafayette, 55. In Indianapolis and Terre Haute, it was 49 degrees. Willard Airport reported a partly sunny sky at the top of the hour, the temperature 56, the dew point 43, the relative humidity 61%, the wind out of the northeast at 16, and the barometric pressure 29.92 and falling. And at 12:39, 57 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. 50 years ago, in the spring and summer of 1961, more than 400 Americans, black and white, young and old, came together to defy Jim Crow laws. They traveled together on buses through the Deep South, where racial segregation, while prohibited by federal law, was enforced with a heavy hand. They were met with violence. They feared for their lives. Some were beaten. Buses were mobbed. In Anniston, Alabama, a bus was firebombed. Yesterday, a group of college students, former freedom riders, and civil rights scholars finished a commemoration of the original Freedom Ride of 1961. For 8 days, they traveled by bus from Washington, D.C. to New Orleans. The ride was organized by the public television series American Experience, producers of the documentary Freedom Riders, which premiered last night on PBS. One of the people on the ride was historian Raymond Arsenault. He is the author of the book on which the documentary is based, Freedom Riders, 1961 and the Struggle for Racial Justice, first published in 2006, is now available in an abridged edition as the companion book for the PBS documentary. Raymond Arsenault, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
How significant were the Freedom Rides of 1961?
Well, they represented a major change in the nature of the civil rights movement and, indeed, in American democracy. It took the struggle out of the courtroom and into the streets using nonviolent direct action and involved ordinary people taking the responsibility themselves to how to accelerate the pace of change. So it, in some ways, it explains the stark difference between the 1950s and the 1960s, the tumultuous decade where we saw all kinds of aspects of the so-called rights revolution.
While inspiring, this is a very uncomfortable part of our history. Was that evident on this commemorative ride?
Well, this was a kind of joyous celebration, really, of the, I think, the potential for this kind of civic engagement. The students were encouraged to connect to what the Freedom Riders did in 1961 with the social justice issues that they care about today. And we had an extraordinary group of students who spent a lot of intimate time with the Freedom Riders from 1961, and it was an amazing journey, I think, for everybody concerned.
There were some 40 college students who took part in this trip that concluded yesterday. What motivated them to be part of this journey?
Well, we had more than 1,000 applications. We ended up with 40 students from 34 different states. I went through the applications, and I must say I feel much better about the future and about the world that there are at least 1,000 kids of this kind who are so engaged in issues of real importance involving social justice, racial justice, and questions of economic opportunity and economic inequality, and they had many, many issues, immigration issues, and gender equity, and they all have their own issues, but the thing that really, I think, held them together and holds them together is this passion to make a difference, to really make their own lives meaningful and to be involved in something larger than themselves. They evidenced much the same spirit, I think, as the Freedom Riders of 1961, not being willing to pass off the responsibility to the next generation or to anyone else, but they're sort of seizing the day, stepping forward, willing to devote themselves to these causes in a very real way.
What was the connection like between the students and the people who made this journey back in 1961, who were part of this commemorative, joyous celebration of the Freedom Rides of 1961?
You know, by the time we arrived in New Orleans yesterday evening, we were greeted by this amazing street fair, a celebration that only New Orleans can put on, with music and dancers and freedom song singing. But you could see that we had become a family, really. I think that the connection between the Freedom Riders was both emotional and intellectual, and I think that the original Freedom Riders were such an inspiration, but I think it went both ways. These kids were inspiring as well. They really do have the same spirit, and a couple of the students kept talking about the Freedom Riders as their surrogate grandparents, and it was an amazing thing to see.
And what do the Freedom Riders, what do they think of the racial, social justice, and economic justice issues that these students are involved in today?
Well, the original Freedom Riders, there are approximately 350 of them still alive. They're still very much engaged. I mean, they've been on the bus for life. They didn't just hop onto the movement in the 1960s and hop off. They're still very much engaged. They're still troublemakers in the best sense of the term. They're all out there still looking for the beloved community, and I think they have almost all of them have a sort of bittersweet sense that on the one hand they're proud of what they did back in 1961, but they're very aware that we still have a long ways to go to reach the beloved community that they were seeking. There certainly has been a real change in terms of the institutional structures that enforce the Jim Crow system, for example, but that there's still many barriers to true equality, to liberty and justice for all, and so they were continually urging the students to think about new Freedom Rides, at least the equivalent of new Freedom Rides, and it was just a deep bond I think between the young riders and the older ones that we've had social change that we can be proud of, but there's so much of the agenda left undone.
The courage of the original Freedom Riders was immense. What led them to that commitment? What led them to get on the bus and then stick with it for their entire lives?
It's a difficult question to answer. I think as I went through my research, for really a decade trying to track them down and to get to know them and to sort of fill in the gaps of this story. I think I discovered that each story was unique, but they had something that allowed them to. I mean, the cliche is to think outside the box, but to put themselves outside of the comfortable American mainstream. Either a teacher who had been a conscientious objector, or a political dissenter, or someone in their family who was able to cross racial lines and to get beyond the conventional stereotypes, and so they had role models, I think, to help them. But they were intellectually inquisitive, and they're people who think for themselves. There's a kind of a skeptical quality to them, in a sense. Although I think the other thing that sort of brought them together is that they took the rhetoric of American democracy to heart. They really believed in the ideals. In that sense, there's almost a conservative quality that they wanted to make America live up to these cherished ideals that had been breached for so long.
What was it like for you to be part of this commemorative event?
It's been one of the greatest experiences of my life, I have to say. I've been sort of living with the Freedom Riders now for 13 years. When I began my research, the Freedom Rides was not considered, I think, for the most part, to be a major turning point in the civil rights story. And I think too often we thought of the movement as a top-down rather than a bottom-up movement, that there was too much emphasis, I think, in our understanding on charismatic leaders and dividing people into leaders and followers. And I think what the Freedom Ride shows, and I know there are many other civil rights historians now who also share this view, that it really is essentially a grassroots movement that really expanded the realm of the possible in American democracy. It expanded the notion of citizen politics. And so for this to get out to a broader audience with the film and with the new edition of the book and with all the touring museum exhibits and websites and all the things that have been part of this extraordinary Freedom Rider phenomena during this 50th anniversary celebration, it's just been extraordinarily rewarding and gratifying to finally see the Freedom Riders get their due. I mean, these are among the most heroic figures in American history, and they were forgotten for a long time. They weren't lost. They were still out there searching for the beloved community. They knew where they were, but it's great that America has finally found them again, because I think they have a lot to tell us and a lot to teach us.
Ray Arsenault, thank you very much for talking with me this afternoon.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Raymond Arsenault is professor of Southern History at the University of South Florida. He's the author of Freedom Riders, 1961 and the Struggle for Racial Justice. The book is now available in an abridged form to serve as the companion book for the PBS American Experience documentary, Freedom Riders. The publisher, Oxford University Press.